So your mother could have been a kind of unofficial agent of the MFS. And
Like a spy.
yeah, there were a lot of spies who were invisible, so to say. So no one knew whom to trust. So they created a complete society based off of fear of another.
Wow.
And this is something which I feel very intensely within me.
Hi, and welcome to Taboo with Mimi, the podcast that talks about anything and everything, really, that is taboo in this world. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No. But seriously, I go around the world because I'm a digital nomad and I interview people from different cultures and ask them about their taboos. Why? Because it's time to talk about them. Some things will hopefully make you think, others will maybe gross you out, but most things will be something you can relate to. So there you have it.
Welcome to Taboo with Mimi.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Taboo with Mimi. I am here with a special guest today because she's not only a guest, she's also one of the beautiful women of Creativa that has decided to come here. I just wanted to say that I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you
Thank
for
you.
coming. I think this is going to be a very cool conversation, but yes, who are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to talk to you. I am mentor, counselor for conflict resolution and for peace building on a personal level, but also working with teams. I studied conflict for the last 7 years. I transformed my life completely from living really in inner conflict and having a lot of trouble with the world around me and make a sense of this life since I found my purpose and were able to, just shift my reality. I'm much more in peace, much calmer. I guess people who know me from 10 years before wouldn't recognize me anymore.
Who is she?
And so I'm still surprised, of how just am today. So yeah.
Yeah. And you're Yulia, just for
Right.
for the people who are listening. Where are you from?
I'm German. I grew up in Leipzig and was living in Dresden for a couple of years. And the last years I was in Magdeburg, the smaller town in Germany. So yeah, everything around Berlin, so to say.
And why did you decide to study conflict resolution?
The initial point was more because of societal shifts which happened in Europe. Already since 2011, a lot of refugees from the Arab states, have come to Europe. And there was just,
Syria.
right, there was just also Iraq, where we many from Iraq already, also in Germany and so on, and Afghanistan as well. I was never really into politics when I was in school, but always very interested in history and already had an understanding of more wider scope and those larger circles of how history plays out itself and why we see sometimes recurring patterns from 500 years ago or 200 years ago and so on. I was kind of interested in this stuff, but not on the daily political, so to say. And I was working in a global fast fashion company at this time, and demonstrations started where people were coming together, expressing their fears around the Islamization of Europe, so to say. And I had an initial feeling in my gut, like, oh my God, this is so dangerous for our society. Those demonstrations grew, they spread into other big states in Germany and also then across Europe. And now we know where we are at with those kind of things and the many of right-wing parties, which are now also in governments around Europe. So there was just a great fear within me arising where I think it's more like coming from a generational kind of thing because I never experienced Nazis or whatever, a war. Then I realized like, okay, there has to be something I can do as well. When I moved to Magdeburg, I had a roommate or a flatmate and she studied peace and conflict studies as a master program. And I was super interested in it. I was looking for something else and was just a gut feeling for me to say, okay, I'm going to study it. And within the master program, then at one point I had a seminar about mediation. And it was the first time in 5 years or 4 years that I had to bring in a personal perspective where I was asked to write a reflection paper of how this mediation seminar was kind of fitting into my own life, what I learned, and also the whole study program itself. And I wrote this essay, and when I was done, I started to cry because I realized like how many conflicts I have had in my life with people around me not really being able to sustain friendships, at least the most of them, having a very troubleful relationship with my mom almost all my life, a lot of fights. And so yeah, just constant stress kind of going on from a very early age. I realized writing this paper like, wow, this was kind of a subconscious decision which led me here to understand myself better through studying conflicts. And so yeah, I realized like how all of those methods and the ways to analyze an international conflict I can also just use for myself, because you can use mediation, for example, for international conflicts or couples. You can also mediate your conflicts within yourself when you know how.
Super cool. I want to take you back to something you said that just like kind of lighted something in my head when you said, I did not experience war. I did not experience Nazism, for example. How does that, I think it's really interesting because I didn't either. I'm Italian, obviously, but I think for Germans is different. So I'd like to understand from your perspective, because I know a lot of people, because I also kind of studied conflict resolution, a lot of my classmates were also, when I was studying in Israel, were coming from Germany, actually. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people come because they feel this guilt or this redemption. And I'm just curious, what do you think about that? How was it, even also to just approach conflict resolution and war as a person from Germany, for example? How do you grow up when you study the war, when you study Nazism, which I feel like is still kind of like taboo, like people talk about it, but I'm kind of like in a weird way, being very, very, very careful. Mm. And as a German person, I think I'm just, that would be like really interesting to know.
Yeah, I have a couple of things to say about it. One thing is, for example, you know, the kind of symbolism is forbidden in Germany, so by the constitution. Now we are sitting in Indonesia right now, in Bali, and the kind of classic, yeah, NSDAP logo is kind of coming actually from Tibetan, but also Hinduistic tradition. So the leadership of the Third Reich was just copying it and changing it a little bit. So right. Everywhere here, you just see this kind of very specific symbol. And just yesterday, I was, I don't know how to say it in English.
It's called the same, I mean, it's Hindu. I think it's like the Hindu, like they call it svastika because I think it means the sun. Yeah. Everybody has it. It's interesting because if you come, and a friend of mine who I met in Israel last year, she was really shocked because she's like, I was just in a car and I saw the svastika there because a taxi driver had it. And I was shocked because my head just went to Nazism, whether for Hinduism is just the symbol of the sun, and it actually means prosperity, and they use it because it means light, all the good things.
Yeah.
So they keep it in their cars, in their houses, everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. On the balcony from the accommodation I was living before, there was a smaller roof underneath my balcony. So I was constantly looking at one of those signs all the time when I was sitting there.
Yeah.
And it's just, for me, it's always a trigger. So I was reflecting yesterday about the deep symbolism, and that for me as a German, it is absolutely connected to a lot of pain, a lot of guilt, a lot of cruel, which happened, you know. So seeing it represented in another culture, being exactly the opposite of it, is just, yeah, sometimes mind-blowing, and just shows how much our narrative and the way also history is made by narratives and the way we learn about it just has a very great impact. Because it's not a symbol at the end itself, it's what meaning we give this symbol, you know. And for me as a German in school, there's just so much we learn about all of this, about when did this start and when did that start and so on. There's just a lot about our own kind of history. For sure, there's also other stuff, but it's just mainly focused on it. And during my studies in Poland last year, a class about Jewish heritage, and we read a very interesting text there. So I realized, okay, due to this constant remembering, you know, of things which happened, we have a constant re-traumatization of the people. So you see it with Jewish people themselves, but you see it also with the Germans in the history lessons themselves. It's a different form of pain, and it's a different form of, yes, guilt. There's a lot of generational pain. It's just where I realize, okay, so how do we deal with it? It is important to remember, but are the ways we remember things are actually helpful, or do they reinforce traumatization? And this was, it's just still a thing which is going on within me where I don't know an answer yet, but I would be interested what you think about it as well. So another thing I realized was I was reading a book about high politicians over the centuries and astrologers. It's a semi-academic book, I have to say. It was the first time that I heard about the whole occultism around the Nazi regime back then. And I was super surprised just a couple of months later, again in Poland. Okay. Without me mentioning it in any way, Polish people I got to know told me that they were learning about this occult stuff, which was going on back then, in school and in university. And in Germany, there's absolutely no debate about it.
What is it? What
for
does
example,
this mean?
The burning of the books is mm-hmm. seen as a ritual, whatever, occult ritual, which had a just deeper meaning and was kind of, they did different kind of witchcraft stuff.
And also to just eliminate culture. You couldn't read what you wanted. You have to read whatever you were told to.
Yeah. And the most cruel thing I found was how these kind of the Jewish and other people's lives, which have been kind of sacrificed to cover the land of Europe in blood as a sacrifice to a certain kind of God or Mother Earth or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's always, for sure, what kind of perspective that they had and why. And so, but when I mean, it was just mind blowing for me, you know, because we thought we learned all about it. And as Germans, we had to understand this kind of history the most. And then realizing, okay, there are other people around us who learn about much deeper stuff and much more dangerous and also troubling and frightening stuff, which no one is talking about. And I was telling this to some German friends I met in Poland as well. And they were like, nah, that's not true. So they had to reconfirm what I was telling them by asking other Polish students. And
you were right.
Yeah, yeah. We were just all like, okay, wow, this is kind of mind-blowing, you know? Mm-hmm. Why? So the question then comes in, why is no one talking about it? These are just my thoughts about it. And it's not easy to deal with. I know my both great-grandfathers were members of the NSDAP.
Which is, for just all of our listeners.
Yeah, which no was the party which brought Hitler to power. They were members of the army during war.
And everybody was, like, basically, no?
I mean, there was resistance, for sure. But people always thought in Germany after the war, and kind of, this can never happen again because now we know and so on.
Right.
But what you see since what I was telling 2014 when I was living in Dresden, those demonstrations starting, it's exactly fitting into this narrative.
Right.
And there are forces within, especially conservative kind of groups in Germany, which pursue it. There are people I know, especially in the eastern part of Germany where I grew up and where I have the most connection to what the people are experiencing and going through there. They really want and ask for, I mean, not my generation, but the older generations, they ask for a kind of more kind of tailored leader now because they feel like democracy does not really help them. And those are just things which just, they freak me out. Yeah. It's just like, it's hard. Therefore, it's just a lot of anxiety on all levels, on all sides. And I'm just driven by the question like, okay, how can I contribute to help people to understand things which are happening, especially around fears, to deal with them and cope with them in a better way without the need to find a kind of perpetrator outside of themselves.
And very interesting because you talked about generational guilt and trauma. Hmm. What does that mean for you?
So I never really studied it, but as I understand it is that I, for example, at some points had flashbacks into situations where I felt like, oh, okay, maybe this was my grandma or someone from my family line where I was seeing myself or observing someone being in a situation of war and as a woman surrounded by soldiers and stuff like this. So as I understand it, working on different lines, it's our DNA, our blood, where all these traumas are stored in. It's the fears and ways we were brought up, mm-hmm. which also have an influence on it, even when it's super subtle and you wouldn't really see it as this, but it plays out like this. For me personally, I can more relate now to the just recent future, not so much maybe to the war situation, because my great-grandparents, they were just already very old when I was old enough to ask the right questions or the interesting questions. But my whole family grew up in the GDR. The German Democratic Republic was kind of East Germany after the war, where the Russians were. And then with the fall of the Iron Curtain, we all came together in the Federal Republic of Germany. So the reunification in the 1990. And so I was born in 93, and learning about my uncle being part of the kind of border soldiers of the Stasi, the Ministry for State Intelligence or whatever. He did kind of undercover missions in other parts of Europe, especially Western Germany. And he went missing shortly before the fall of the Iron Curtain. And no one knows where he ended up and stuff like this. I just recently in the last years learned about it, but it's very shocking for me that my family never was able to really figure out what was happening to him. My grandpa couldn't really cope with his younger brother when missing, and had a experience of a lot of psychosis, actually, due to feeling that someone is following me. I cannot trust anybody. People are observing me, because there was just this constant thing going on of you'd never know whom to trust and who will tell the officials about what you're actually doing. So I had to work a lot through this just trust issue. And in general, it's just a deep, deep wound, especially within the Eastern German population. You cannot trust your doctor because they were forced to tell your personal health stuff and secrets to officials, to then on the contrary side, that they can come to you and threaten you in any kind of way. The same is with psychiatrists, everybody. So your mother could have been kind of unofficial kind of agent of the MFS. And
like a spy.
Yeah, there were a lot of spies who were invisible, so to say. And so no one knew whom to trust. So they created a complete society based off of fear of another. And this is something which I feel very intensely within me. So because it's my parents' experience, it's my grandparents' experience, it was just absolute domination. This is a good example for how fear keeps people trapped.
Very interesting. I actually asked you about this because I feel like it also reflects so much. It can very much relate somehow in a different way. People that would listen to my podcast, they know I am the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. So for me, it was kind of the same, but the opposite. My grandparents, and I asked you about it because my grandparents were part of the fascist party, because everybody was. If you would ask them, like, we were all fascists during fascism. You didn't really have a choice. And of course, when the war started and everything else and the resistance happened, of course, that is something else. But she was like just describing it like it was normal, because that was the reality. We weren't questioning it too much, because you couldn't really. Only when like bad shit happened afterwards and people after said, oh, what is going on? But the generational guilt and fear for me was so present. Also the victimization of the Jews in general was so present for me, that there was always this story of, you are the minority, you're going to be persecuted, you were killed. I grew up with my grandma. Like, my grandma, I don't know how many times she told the story, and I'm glad that I heard it, about her fleeing to Switzerland. And my grandparents actually met in a working camp in Switzerland. Or like, all her journey when she fled because of the Nazis and this and that, and the family members, that did, those that went to Auschwitz. And that really created such a trauma for me. I was scared of saying that I was Jewish for so many years. And the only way that I could really heal my wound was when I actually moved to Israel, because I wanted to solve the conflict. And then when I got to Israel, so many German kids were there. And I'm like, I've just found it very interesting understanding. And as you said, there is so much generational guilt in that too. And therefore, the two opposites, which are not the opposites, but I would almost say the two opposites attract each other, meaning that the two opposites really relate each other. So many people in Israel and so many Jews around the world say that they would never go to Germany. And then actually it's funny because Berlin is a beautiful and really vibrant Israeli community because some people actually do the opposite in order to redeem for the Israel-Palestinian conflict that they don't agree with. They move to Germany. And so it's like,
interesting, yeah.
It's like, what? It's like kind of like mind blowing. And I don't think I've ever asked because I feel like it's also like really weird to ask like a German person, what do you think about Nazism? Like, what is he going to tell you? Right? Like, unless he's like a Nazi sympathizer, which they exist in Italy as well. Fascism is growing. So I know that it's growing also in Germany. What kind of question is that? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what am I going to tell you? Did you ever get that question? Or what do you think? I mean, obviously, I asked you before, what is your relation to the work and to the guilt in general that it's been passed on? But I feel somehow there's been this thing where people want Germans to really say, oh, that was bad. I'm sorry. That was bad. Why are we doing that? It's kind of reinforcing, as you said, the trauma.
Yeah, I mean, I found the question very interesting because it always depends on how you see yourself within the world, I guess, and also your worldview.
Yeah.
Because I accepted that this is a part of my life and my story and that I have responsibility for it in the here and now to make it better. Not making it better is wrong. I mean, you never know. But just through looking at the past, learning from it and realizing, okay, what was wrong back then? And so, as I said, now what's my responsibility? What can I give back to people to prevent it from happening again? As I said, especially empowering people is very important because when they are sure within themselves and when they have the proper tools to find the truth within themselves, they are not so easy to manipulate any kind of party or whatever, you know,
ideology,
political slogan also. Yeah. And when I truly love and understand myself and have compassion for myself, I believe it is almost impossible to hurt someone else and to wish someone else something bad. It plays a lot into tolerance and so on. But how tolerant are we actually to ourselves? I cannot give tolerance to others, really, when I'm judging myself all the time. But coming back to your initial questions, what do you ask? I mean, you can ask people. It will for sure be intimidating questions, but I'm always argue for provocative. It just sometimes it's helpful to just let people speak, experience themselves when they just start to answer. I never got this question so far, but
never.
Many people have a certain picture of German, them being very direct and also very aggressive in a way and always trying to lead. For example, I was on a hike with one of my classes in Poland. And when I'm hiking, I have a certain pace and I walk this pace. And my professor was saying like, oh, the Germans always need to lead, huh? And I was like, dude, did he really say this right now? I mean, I was like so shocked, you know? That is coming from a professor and it just, you know, random fellow student or so. But there's just a certain way, I guess people are sometimes maybe really afraid of us. Me personally, for sure, I know that people often have been afraid of me because I was so direct and very aggressive in the way I was speaking. So I can really relate to it. Therefore, I guess that, people are just not really open to it. More and more, this question is asked within Germany, under Germans. So, you know. And I was very long on the kind of very anti-fascistic side of things and was super anti, And then realizing at one point, actually, it doesn't help anybody. It does not help me. It does not change the kind of worldview or the perspective of the person on the other side. I'm just wasting my energy here, I feel like. And I know this is also a very controversial topic and maybe a taboo topic, but this is for me what I figured out. That I was like, okay, instead of fighting them, I want to learn from them.
Who's them?
People who vote for the AfD, so the right-wing party in Germany. I want to learn, where is this actually coming from? What is driving them? And only through me understanding their perspective, I'm able to figure out, okay, how can we help you? How can we support you that you don't have this kind of fear about other people coming to Germany, or that you lose your job, which you never have, or that you lose your house, which you never have. They're just so consumed by fear. And when I am only on the opposite side, fighting against them, creating much more separation instead of bringing people together, I've figured out this is not working. And it's hard to tolerate such worldviews. It's not easy. It's a real stretch. But I learned so much in those situations where I was sitting with random people. For example, last summer, I was in a dacha from a friend of mine. And the neighbor, which is a woman I already knew from the days I was there before, she was asking me, hey, you want to come over for a kind of barbecue tonight? One of my other neighbors will come as well. And I was like, sure, why should I spend all evenings alone here? Let's connect. They're in their, I don't know, 60s or 70s. And they asked me then, when I introduced myself, like, oh, what are you studying? Peace and conflict studies. And I'm immediately put into the, okay, you're leftist, greenish, anti-fascist kind of woman. And yeah. Which they're right. I mean,
actually, that's true.
So that's true. But the question is, they expected me to react in a certain way, because he was, without me even asking, telling me about all of his political views, what he has against immigrants, why he votes for the AfD, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I hate that this is happening always when I tell people what I'm studying, because yeah, it was not the first time. But I just learned about this, how triggering just mentioning what I was studying to people. And I became curious, because they were suddenly opening up and telling me their deepest fears and secrets without me asking any question. I just sit there and listen. And it helps me to understand where it's coming from. And when we don't understand the other side, it's hard to really create solutions.
Because we just clash.
We just clash, right. I realized also the division, which is still in Germany between the eastern part and the former western part. So most of the West Germans, they just don't get what the East Germans are having on their mind and why.
Yeah.
There's just so much questions. And especially most of the AfD voters are based in eastern Germany.
Like the right wing are
the
based
right
in,
wing.
In
yeah,
the east.
And there I came actually initially from with, okay, how can we come together instead of creating more and more separation, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just a lot of internal shifts, external shifts, I don't know, which, yeah, just changed me, allowing myself to be tolerant, because I expected from others to be tolerant towards me.
Yeah.
But for me, it also means creating space for other worldviews, even when I'm absolutely against them and I don't like them.
Yeah.
But I have to hold a place for it, because yeah, fighting it is just draining.
It is.
And it does not help anybody.
Yeah.
So even when it seems paradox, but for me, at least right now, where I'm right now at in my life, it makes the most sense.
Yeah, super interesting. You mentioned that actually when you sit with people that have completely different worldviews, in this case would be a very right-wing person is against immigration, probably Islamophobic, blah, 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 that they start talking about their fears. What are their fears? Because I would assume that people that are against immigration have a very certain fear that is probably really common to a lot of people. Did you recognize patterns? What were those main fears? Because if the fear exists, it's because something isn't being tackled or addressed, right?
The greatest fear is fear of change, because change is uncomfortable and people like to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Because they are lazy. I don't mean, because it means you always have to adapt somehow to what is going on around you. So, for example, language is one big thing.
Huge.
In English, you don't have this really. I mean, there is this with the pronouns and stuff like this. You have, like, you always say doctor. You never had a female form for doctor, so
like
to say.
Like doctress or something.
Okay, maybe, yeah.
No, it doesn't exist. They say female doctor, because in the English language doesn't exist, but in Italian it's the same as what you're about to say, which means like in Italian, we conjugate for male and female.
And for neutral. Yeah.
You have neutral as well. We have only male and female.
Yeah.
And I talked about it in some of my videos as well, like how important it is. And today's Women's Day, it's Women's International Day. So it's even more important to me, like how important it is to conjugate professions to the female version.
Yeah.
Because language is everything. Language is what we communicate with and how we see and perceive the world. So doctor is only male because back then women couldn't be doctors. It's important that today women hold that space. Women that are female doctors that are in that space are called as they are, which is not just doctor, but doctress or something. Like that word doesn't exist in English, but in Italian, we're still fighting that because for some positions and professions, they exist. For others, which are very, very male-dominated, they still don't.
Yeah.
President, for example, that's a good one. We just have, unfortunately, one of the worst examples of female president in Italy. She's extremely right-wing. I obviously don't like her. She is definitely against women. But she is the first female president in Italy.
It's so contradictory.
And she doesn't want to be called in the female way. We would say la presidente, for example, because la is feminine. And she still want to be called il presidente. Il is masculine, you know? And I'm like, that fucking, a lot of people do not want to change as well, because as you said, change is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So sorry, I interrupted you, but actually, what were you going to say? Were you going to say something similar?
Actually wanted to talk especially about it. I also realized like this very right-wingish conservative area is very male dominated. And there we come back to the generational trauma, why they fear suddenly women not just having much more influence in the corporate world, in politics nowadays, at least in Europe, we have females somewhere in ministry positions also. So they are also in decision-making positions, even maybe when it's not like in the
top 10
of the companies. But they are just very afraid of us. And giving us also the recognition by calling us in the female way, like Ärztin instead of Arzt in German, you know, for doctor.
Yeah.
Is giving us more power, which formerly we haven't had.
Correct.
When I sometimes read comments under shorts somewhere on YouTube, especially those coming from the US comments down there, it's like, yeah, we have to dominate our women. When
control.
I tell her she is not allowed to go out in this short dress and meet her friends, then she is not allowed to. Otherwise, she doesn't respect me. There is so much stuff where I'm just sitting there and I'm like,
what
they are really believing this. And this is just a great sense of fear, actually. So language is a big thing, but not just in terms of gender, but also about losing the German influence, losing its current state. They completely forget that the German language and all languages have always changed and shifted. 100 years ago, we still had other kind of letters used. I mean, still the same letters, but the writing was very different. So my grandma, and so they learned a different kind of German writing back in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it looked very different and it's very hard to read for me, actually. It's called Alt German, if you want to translate it like this. There are constant changes, but people are not recognizing this. And I have one of my former roommates. He's always very upset because I'm studying in English. The last years where this English was always very present. I use a lot of English words when I speak German.
Of course.
And he's always annoyed. He's always like, why can't you say this in German? And I'm like, let me figure out. I mean, it's just coming natural to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just a lot of fear around this. So we have change, we have language. What would happen when other cultures are just more Muslims than Germans maybe at one point? Or I mean, German, you cannot really say and compare with Muslims because most of the Germans are not really Christians, at least in Eastern Germany. During the DDR, religion was kind of not very well received. Therefore, this is also a thing like, okay, what is when all those other religions are coming here? What does it do to our country? I don't want to listen to the Muezzin every morning, blah, 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 blah. Stuff like this, you know. It's just absolute. They listen to the church music or the church bells.
And then
every single day, and no one complains so about it, you know.
Yeah.
But the Muezzin, this is the stricken, and I'm like, why? You have tolerance for this, but you don't have tolerance for that. Then also, yeah, the fear that there could be war again in Europe, the fear of the regulations of the European Union are a very big thing for this group as well. They're regulating everything, and now we're not allowed to do this, and now we have to buy those expensive things or whatever. It's just, you know, especially in Germany, bureaucracy is just overbearing for people. They are very afraid of losing what they achieved in their life. So this is really speaking for the eastern part of Germany, because so my parents' generation and grandparents' generation, they experienced at least two different state systems they lived in.
Right.
And they had to rebuild everything. Most of the people lost their job. My dad was not allowed to go to the university because he was doing his kind of 1 year of being in the army when the war was falling. So he was seen as a collaborator of the system. Therefore, in the Federal Republic of Germany, he was denied access to university.
Wow.
There was just a lot of stuff diminishing the people, not allowing them to really pursue their life that they had actually planned out for themselves. So a lot of dreams were destroyed. And therefore, it's just too much. There is a lot of generational trauma. It's not addressed. No one is talking about it. When they're talking about East Germans, they are making fun of our accents. They're seeing us as, oh yeah, the East Germans are behind because they don't get it and they're all right-wingish. There are only 2% of East German people represented in public administration.
Wow.
So people who are making decisions on a political level, West Germans, you know? Enfield, which was your first question, and also the second question, more about a general sense of conflict resolution, is when we don't know how peace within myself and peace in general, a peaceful society, feels like, because we never were able to experience it, we have to figure out for ourselves how does it feel. I read this very interesting question, which initially brought me on the way of studying for 3 years now, inner peace and personal conflict resolution. It's about when people who are sitting on the table and negotiating peace treaties have never experienced peace within themselves and don't know what they are actually creating, then they are not able to create sustaining and long-lasting peace treaties for a whole nation or for a region or between two peoples.
Because they don't have them within themselves.
They don't have them in themselves.
Right.
Personally, on a personal level, it's very, as I see, the most important thing, self-responsibility. You don't help yourself when you are stuck in the victim mode of your circumstances, of your life circumstances. We all have gone through different forms of traumas, either generational or personal. It does not help anybody because no one can solve this for you now. For us as adults, it's important to say, okay, this is what happened. Working through all the resistance which comes of accepting this as it is what it is, and then saying, okay, and what can I do for myself now? How can I show up for myself when there is a conflict arising and when I feel like I need to change something or want to feel better? And there are different techniques. There are on the one side techniques you can use, which are more like helping you to understand the root causes of conflicts, or on the other side, which help you more to increase your capacity to really be and live a peaceful life. But you have to start at the beginning, which is tapping into yourself, allowing yourself to release the resistance. And this is only happening, I guess, for me personally, through allowing yourself to feel your emotions, which is very unsexy across the board, no matter where you're looking at. When it's about fears or emotional stuff or mental health issues, running away from it will just make it haunt you more. So you have to go through it and come out the other side. And that's why I'm doing this work as well, because people have to have people who can help them and guide them, who have gone through this already and can hold their hand. And there are so many different forms of therapists and counselors and mentors and coaches and whatever. And everybody has a possibility to find, especially those who can help them best. On a societal level, actually, it's the same. We have to address the conflicts which are underneath what the news are talking about. You know, we have to talk about the separation and we have to talk about how to bring people together. Focus much more on positive news than on all of the crazy stuff going on. Because people are nowadays, they're just overwhelmed. They don't know how to cope with it. Crisis after crisis after crisis after crisis. Our nervous systems are very young in this experience of seeing constant news updates every day. Back in the day, just 50 years ago, people were reading the newspaper, which is a way different form than consuming pictures and movies. It has a much greater impact of our nervous system when we see actually the conflict happening. So we have to allow us as humans a kind of evolutionary period that our bodies, our biosystems can actually adapt to this new and much faster appearance of news updates and of information every day. Understanding this has really helped me also to say, okay, I realize, okay, my body is now overwhelmed. I step away. Now I'm opening myself up again and look for it.
Love it. Work on your inner peace if you want peace for the world, basically.
Yeah.
I love it. Julia, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Julia also has a podcast.
Yeah.
It's in German only, but if you want to say, we will link it down below with also your social media handles and stuff. So if you want to listen to what she says, do you want to tell us what your podcast is about?
Yeah, my podcast is actually about personal and societal conflicts as well as personal and societal peace. I dive through different kind of research topics and also personal experiences of myself. I also regularly have guests who come from a specific field, for example, nonviolent communication, and we are talking about bringing people different kinds of techniques to make an impact in their lives and change in a very small and tiny way and see what kind of a big impact this has. Yeah. And the podcast is called The Peaceful Path. At one point, sooner or later, it will also be available in English, but not so far.
If you're lucky enough that you understand German, you can listen it.
Yes, right.
You can listen to it otherwise.
But I also have an English speaking Instagram account. So there I also share a lot of those tips and infos for everybody in English. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Mimi.
For all of our listeners, I'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.